Production support for Earth Eats comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world, offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm your host, Kate Young.
They called me the chicken lady. I was a cake decorator. I learned how to bake bread. And then I led the deli, I led the bakery, and then I led all of it.
Maria Brummett held many positions at Kroger before she landed as head of the cheese shop at Kroger's flagship store on Bloomington's east side. We'll hear more from her and what she needs to know about all different types of cheeses later on in the show. We've got a story about a horseradish festival from Harvest Public Media, and Chef Daniel Orr takes us on another walk on the wild side. This time, it's daylilies and cattails. All that coming up, so stay tuned to Earth Eats. First, we join Alex Chambers for some food news. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Kate. So I don't know if you know about right-to-work laws, which sound like they're about guaranteeing jobs for people, but are actually about weakening unions. Well, there's a new twist on that term in North Carolina, where the legislature just passed a right-to-farm law.
Huh. Okay. I want to hear about that.
I want to tell you about it. But first, we've got a story about grass forecasting. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has developed a new tool that predicts how much grass ranchers in some plains states can expect. Donnell Peck with the USDA says ranchers typically rely on rain forecasts, but the so-called digital grasscast map looks at precipitation, weather, and historic data. If there's a drought, grasscast can help ranchers brace for less food for their cattle.
That helps inform how many cattle they should keep versus send to the market.
She says there could be a similar service for the Southern Plains by next year. North Carolina's agriculture industry is in the spotlight again this week as advocacy groups rally to urge the state's governor to veto new right-to-farm legislation. In a letter to Governor Roy Cooper, the groups are urging him to veto Senate Bill 711, also known as the Farm Act. The Farm Act, which has already passed the Senate, seeks to curtail farm nuisance lawsuits by requiring plaintiffs to demonstrate that the farm in question is not adhering to, quote, generally accepted and routinely utilized agricultural practices. The legislation does not address that these generally accepted practices, like hog lagoons and liquefied manure as fertilizer, often cause health and environmental disasters in neighboring communities. The Farm Act comes on the heels of a $50 million victory for one set of plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Smithfield subsidiary Murphy Brown. In this case, a jury found these generally accepted practices exposed neighbors to health risks and lowered their quality of life. There are 26 more lawsuits against Murphy Brown pending. Senate Bill 711 would not apply to the lawsuits already being processed by the courts, but it would apply to future cases. The bill passed the state Senate last week, and Governor Cooper has until June 25th to decide to veto it.
Thank you, Alex. And thanks to Esther Honig of Harvest Public Media and our own Taylor Killow for those reports. From sushi to prime rib, Bloody Marys to cocktail sauce, there's one ingredient that can give them that signature zing. Horseradish. Harvest Public Media's Madeline Beck went to the International Horseradish Festival near St. Louis to find out more about the pungent root and the people who celebrate it.
Even in the 95-degree heat, horseradish can be hotter.
Woo!
Where's the steak?
Yeah, that's right.
This is the 31st annual Horseradish Festival in Collinsville, Illinois. It nearly doubled in size this year and isn't slowing down. Or at least, not if co-organizer Shannon Stelling has anything to say about it.
I've been very passionate about it. I get very excited talking about it.
Most of the nation's, if not the world's, commercial horseradish comes from two counties near this southwestern Illinois town, and it's got roots more than 100 years deep, so Stelling wants to keep it front and center.
Because it's such a rich part of our tradition here in Collinsville.
She's not the only root enthusiast. Thousands of festival goers were buying up horseradish plants, horseradish sauces, horseradish smothered bratwursts, and plenty of horseradish Bloody Marys. Here's Chef Carl Vollmer, who prepared them.
We made 56 gallons of it, and out of the 56 gallons, 8 gallons of it is horseradish.
And then there's the horseradish throwing and blending and plenty of tasting. I tried some blended with just vinegar and salt water. That's got some zing to it.
There you go.
I also ate some in Charlie Adams' gourmet mustard.
That's delicious. That is a mild horseradish.
Yeah.
Those who grow it love it too, but caution that it should be eaten in moderation.
Because otherwise you're going to think it's not good if you overdo it.
That's Dennis Hepke. He and his brother Jeff are fifth-generation horseradish farmers in Madison County, Illinois. They grow about 200 acres of horseradish in different fields every year, cycling back every 5 to 7 years to prevent root rot, insects, and nutrient loss. When they're ready, these roots are massive, often more than a foot long and a couple inches in diameter at the top, much larger than most garden-grown roots. Jeff says that's because here in the Mississippi River bottoms, the roots thrive.
The sandy soil and the mild winters helps with harvest.
Horseradish may seem obscure, but you're probably eating it more than you think. Take the wasabi paste that's served with sushi. Chances are, as Dennis explains, it's probably not from an actual wasabi plant.
A lot of wasabi, quote unquote, is horseradish just dyed green because wasabi is so incredibly expensive and hard to grow.
And what about that zip in your shrimp cocktail sauce? Also horseradish. For those of the Jewish faith, it's often on a Seder dish as a bitter herb. The nation's largest supplier for the root is right in Collinsville. It's called J.R. Kelly Company. They sell up to 12 million pounds a year from area growers to companies around the nation and the world. Some goes to grocers, but most goes to grinders for sauces. Sauces that keep flying off the shelves at this festival, which is way bigger than the 50-person barbecue in an alleyway park where it started in 1987. The festival moved away from the local shopping area for decades, but came back to Main Street this year. And that's no accident, as Collinsville tries to bring in more revenue for area businesses and incentivize people to stay.
The state of Illinois, unfortunately, is shrinking.
Collinsville Mayor John Miller says this right before cutting a ribbon for a new business.
And we're doing everything we can to keep people here.
And people swarmed the festival on its second day. Even as it started to rain and thunder, folks stuck around, hiding briefly under stoops and popping back out the second the rain went away. They had plenty of non-horseradish festivities too, like a novice ventriloquist, a police dog demonstration, and an Elvis impersonator.
Thank you very much. You're fantastic.
But even as people were distracted by this or that, you'd catch the whiff of that zesty root. And it lingers. Madeline Beck, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on our food system from the heartland. Find more at harvestpublicmedia.org. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. And Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeigner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Chef Daniel Orr has been on a wild edibles kick in recent weeks, and it's easy to understand why. Here in southern Indiana, the spring and summertime offers so many opportunities for foraging. So far, we've talked about pokeweed, black locust blossom, dandelion greens, and grape leaves. Today, we have some great ideas for daylilies and cattails. We'll start with the daylilies. You've probably seen them, even if you don't know what they're called. They're a bulb flower, and there are many different varieties, sizes, colors. The type we're talking about here is a common variety seen growing on slopes and yards, on roadsides, all over Indiana in midsummer, and in many other places across the country for that matter. The blossoms are large, light orange, and clustered on top of tall bare stems. The leaves are flat and linear, like those of a daffodil. Maybe you didn't know it, but you can eat those flowers. Let's hear from Farm Bloomington's Chef Daniel Orr for some of his favorite ideas.
The daylilies, you can see they're beautiful. You can just eat them whole. Eat the whole flower. Almost like a salad, like a lettuce, romaine lettuce. You can also take those same flowers and separate the petals out and sprinkle them on a salad. You can also take those same flowers and dip them in a tempura batter and deep fry them, and they make a lovely tempura, and then serve those with like a spicy peanut sauce or a sweet chili sauce, something like that. Or if you want to take it the other direction, almost serve it like an elephant ear and just have them for dessert with a little drizzle of maple syrup or some powdered sugar. You don't have to wait for the flowers to bloom. You also have these pods, and you can hear me kind of pick these pods off, they snap off. And when you eat those, it's almost like a bean. And these you can use in stir fries. They're good raw too, just to sprinkle in salads.
So they're basically the flower bud.
They are the flower bud before it opens up.
The flower buds can also be pickled or dehydrated. The dried buds are used in traditional Chinese dishes such as hot and sour soup and mushu. They add a unique flavor and can also serve as a thickening agent. You can dry them in a low oven, a microwave, or a dehydrator. We have instructions and links on our website. I tried daylily tempura this week, and I've included photos and a recipe on our website, eartheats.org. Another wild plant which I never knew you could eat is cattails.
Cattail is known as the supermarket of the marsh, so it always has something to give to you.
One of the ways to eat cattails is to harvest the stalk of the plant, usually in the spring or early summer, before it's sent up that characteristic brown, fuzzy seed head, which looks something like the tail of a cat. Once you locate a cattail patch, pull a few stalks from the center part of the plant, leaving the roots intact. When you're back in your kitchen, cut off and discard the top part of the stalk, leaving the bottom 6 to 8 inches. Then you'll peel off all the tough outer layers of the stalk till you get to the centermost tender portion of the cattail. You'll know you're there by tasting it. It snaps and has a nice tender crunch, no tough fibers. That's what you're looking for. It reminds me of hearts of palm, if you've ever had that. But the flavor is remarkably close to a cucumber, and you can use it just like you would cucumber. Chef D uses it in tzatziki, the Greek yogurt sauce with cucumber and mint. He just substitutes the cattail heart for the cucumber, and we've got a great recipe for that on our website. Here's Chef Daniel Orr talking about what you can make with the part of the plant that gives the cattail its name.
If you know cattail, usually you think of the fluffy part, and then you have this spear on the top. Well, the spear on the top is the male part of the plant, and that's where the pollen is. When you're looking for cattail pollen, which is what we're using today, you want to find it while it's still kind of yellow and firm. It can be a little bit dry like this one here. It can be completely green. Let's see if we can find one that's completely green.
This one?
Yeah, so this one here. And you're gonna see that when I pull that off, it's very yellow on the inside. And that's going to be one of the more flavorful parts. The female part, when it is still very young like this, can be steamed or boiled in salt water and then drenched in butter and eaten like corn on the cob. You can eat the pollen. So that could be eaten in pancakes or muffins, or I love to cook the pollen in with rice, but it does add some sweetness to it. It's very sweet.
So to harvest what he's calling the pollen from the top part of the spear, you just put your thumbnail right at the dividing line between the two parts of the cattail and then push down to strip the pollen off the stem. It's very easy and very quick. You can strip it right into a paper bag to keep it contained. We have some photos of this on our website in case you can't quite picture it.
Looks like we've got about, push it down, cup. Okay, we're going to add an equal amount of flour, and to that we're going to add some sweetener, about 2 tablespoons of agave. Now you could add probably a tablespoon of regular sugar to that, or a little bit more to taste. We're going to add a touch of salt, about 1/4 teaspoon. We're going to add about 1/4 teaspoon of baking powder. We're going to add about 1/4 cup of olive oil and 2 eggs. Now, the key to any quick bread is to not overwork it. I'm going to add 1 cup of buttermilk. Now, you could use any kind of milk and just add a little bit of acid to it, because I think the acid really kind of helps cut the sweetness of the cattail pollen. So we're just going to mix this, and like I was saying, with any quick bread, you do not want to overwork it. So if there's some lumps in it, that's fine. All right, so we got a nice pancake batter here. Take these over to the stove, and we're going to fry them up. Got a nice big skillet on. Okay, very important that you let the pan heat up enough. You want just below the smoking point. So you don't want the oil to be smoking, but you want the pan to be hot enough that when you add the batter, it's not going to cool your pan down, which would make them stick. It should sizzle when you put the first little scoop of batter down. So now we're going. And then we want to cook them until we see the bubbles come up to the surface and it starts to almost look dried out.
Another one here. Another one in the middle.
Okay, so by the time you get around, the first one should be about done. So let's see. Yes.
That looks perfectly brown.
I'm gonna turn it down a little bit. Now I like pancakes cooked in a little bit of fat so they get crunchy and they're really good, but you can also not use quite as much fat and they won't be quite as much good. And these are great with all kinds of different toppings. Of course, maple syrup, honey, sorghum, a little bit of molasses. Okay, and I think you'll really find these very different from your everyday pancake. You're using 50% cattail pollen, and I think it really makes a difference. All right, and so we've got all of them flipped. We're going to serve them onto a platter and let you guys give them a little taste.
It is a sweet flavor.
Yeah.
I want to say nutty, but it's not quite nutty. It's like nothing else. I was just thinking what a fun thing this would be to do with kids. You know,
yeah.
Have them go out there and pick them and then strip the pollen off. And
you can go out in a canoe. You can, you know, I mean, I think that it's a great family project. And the good thing about this is you can pick this now and keep the pollen in the freezer and it will keep for a year. So go ahead and go out and pick as much as you can and freeze it. And then you can use it all throughout the whole season.
We've got photos of all of it, plus the cattail pollen pancake recipe on the Earth Eats website, eartheats.org. Next, we have one of my favorite stories from Earth Eats founder and former host, Annie Corrigan.
In December 2016, Kroger and Murray's Cheese opened their 350th store location and just happened to be in Bloomington, Indiana. That's sort of a fun fact that kicks off our conversation today with Maria Brummett. She's a Murray's Cheese Master in Bloomington. A job that was initially intended just for pocket change has now given Maria the opportunity to be an expert in her field. First things first, if you want to go behind the cheese counter at Kroger, you have to wear the right equipment.
All right, hairnet. Okay, headphones over top.
Kroger ready. This Murray's cheese counter features something like 175 different varieties of cheese. There are little info cards that give you every bit of information you could ever care to know about every block of cheese. That same info is collected in a hefty binder in the break room. This is Maria's cheese Bible. She's using it to study for the American Cheese Society's test to become a certified cheese professional.
I've already didn't pass once, but I'm gonna try it again.
She travels to Denver at the end of July to take the test.
You have to know the milk type. We have to know where they're from. And which ones are name-protected cheeses, which ones are not, how to make a plate of cheese with different ones, how to actually make cheese.
You have to know how to make cheese?
Yeah, we have to know all the steps and the temperatures that each different cheese has, the temperatures of the caves that they're in, and what they have to do to them, and got to know which beer and wine goes with the cheese as well. It's a lot.
So name-protected cheeses, for instance?
Like the Parmigiano Reggiano can only be made in a certain area in Italy. The milk can only travel so far, or it can't be called Parmigiano Reggiano. And they also save the leftover whey. They feed it to their pigs, and that's how they make prosciutto di Parma. And that also has to be made in a certain area, and that's why it's so rich and buttery.
She also has to know the fat content of the different milks.
Like the goat milk is a lot lower in fat, and then the sheep milk is higher. So it goes goat, cow, sheep, and then buffalo.
Buffalo is the highest in fat.
Yes, and they only make, they usually just make mozzarella with it. You cannot drink buffalo milk because it's like yogurt.
That sort of memorization is easy and fun for her.
I think my hardest part is probably the math, like the margin and markup and converting grams to ounces and pounds. And so that's kind of tough for me because I only did like the basic math in school. My son, he was like, graduated from IU with honors, and he did like the highest math you could do, and I'm like, maybe I need to have him help me.
These days, her brain is flooded with facts about fancy cheeses, but she grew up eating the processed stuff.
We had government cheese, which is now I know is fake cheese. Like Kraft and all that, American cheese is only, they have to use 50% real cheese, and then I don't know what else they put in it. But back then, it was really good. But we used to make some big, thick grilled cheese sandwiches.
She was raised by a single mother. They lived in California, Florida, and New York. But she's called Indiana home most of her life.
I was 18, 20, and 22 when I had my kids. I dropped out of my senior year of high school. I was pregnant. But I went back the following year. I was married, had a baby, lived in my own house, and graduated high school. So, and I got the Comeback Kid of the Year award because I was out on my own and I went to school every day and I got good grades, so.
She was 25 when she decided to pick up a job at Kroger to make some extra money. First, they had her frying chicken.
They called me the chicken lady. I was a cake decorator. I learned how to bake bread, and then I led the deli, I led the bakery, and then I led all of it.
And then it was over to the cheese.
I was helping in the bakery, doing their fancy cakes and all that, and the manager then was like, hey, we're going to have a cheese shop. He said, you've always been a good leader. Would you like to take it over? And I was like, sure, I'll try it. Why not? I haven't done that yet.
That was 9 years ago. She's 46 years old now. She travels around the state helping other stores open cheese counters, and she'd love to do that full time.
I didn't think I was going to have a career. Just thought, oh, I'll just go work for a little bit and then move on to something else. But I think out of all the jobs I've done in Kroger, this is my favorite. I've been eating cheese all my life, but just the learning part of it is, it's pretty cool.
If I should leave here with one cheese, what would it be?
I would say the St. Angel Brie. It's a triple cream brie. It's 72% butterfat. So anything over 75 is butter. If you let it, and you always want to sit your cheese out and let it get to room temperature, because that has the most flavor then.
So it's almost amazing. Butter.
Yes, almost butter. It is amazing.
Maria Brummett is a Murray's Cheese Master in Bloomington, Indiana. She did admit to me that she still has some processed pseudo-cheese products in her house for her husband, but she doesn't dare eat the stuff herself. See a picture of Maria at eartheats.org.
And thanks to Annie Corrigan, founder and former host of Earth Eats, for that story from last summer. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows. Helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. That does it for our show today. Thanks to the Earth Eats crew, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, and all the folks at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Annie Corrigan, Maria Brummett, and Jackie Howard. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young. Thanks for listening to Earth Eats. We'll be back next week.